This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
Welcome back to the Jesse Kelly Show. I'm Lydia Serrani at Lydia News, LIDIANEWS. That's LIDIANEWS. Oh, you know, so much of the year is coming to a close, right? And what did we learn? That we were right all along, right? And the truth is funny, right? No matter how much you try to suppress it and hide it, it always has a way of coming out. You know, the light, all you need is a speck of light to make the darkness go away, right? And that's what I feel is happening with the world today, that things that were wrong are finally going right. People are waking up and saying, you know what, these progressive, I call them regressive, policies are not working anymore. This whole bail reform, oh, we have too many black and brown people. And well, instead of just letting them out, why not invest in their communities, specifically their education, right? Education is the greatest equalizer. I bring it back to here in New York City. I'm from the Bronx, born and raised. Now I live in Westchester County, which is a nice suburb outside of New York City. I'm about 20 miles away from Midtown Manhattan. And, you know, it's amazing to me because I went to Catholic school all my life. Thank God for my parents that they invested in my education. But these kids that go to public school, their parents, maybe they can't afford it. Maybe they don't have two parents. Maybe it's just one mom and she's not home all the time. They don't have after school programs. They don't. They don't have sports. I say there should be sports. And sports isn't just about having the next NBA star, NFL, whatever. This is about keeping kids busy. And that's what's happening. You're seeing in Chicago, the number of children, teenagers that are carjacking people in Chicago, it's astounding. Washington, D.C., that it's such an epidemic. What's happening with young people? They're lost. Do you know how many? It's a staggering statistic, the number of kids that can't even write a coherent sentence when they graduate eighth grade. They're graduating high school. They barely have a third grade, fourth grade reading level. This is what's going on in our country. And instead of saying, you know what, these kids need help, the way we can help them is by investing in their education, not just throwing money at it. We need real teachers that need to be held accountable, because I think that's also another issue. Teachers aren't held accountable. They don't care. They're overworked. They're tired. You have 30 kids to one teacher. They're getting burned out. Class sizes need to be smaller. You need teachers that care. And if the teachers, they require, pay them more, because you are investing in our future. If we had a better education system in this country, we would have less people addicted to drugs, less people in prison. There's such a trickle-down effect, a domino effect. And that's what I think. It all starts with education. It is the Martin Luther King Jr. It's the greatest equalizer. And yet there is no investment in our young people. It's just, oh, your feelings. Oh, you feel bad. Or let's talk about your feelings. Oh, take this. Oh, take this pill. How many kids are now, oh, ADHD, ADD, take this pill. Oh, my kid is antisocial. My kid is transgender. It's out of control. It's out of control what is going on in our country. And there's a lot of sick people out there. You'll listen to one of those sick individuals. I'm going to play for you clip number 15. This is a grown man complaining that he was he's dressed up as a woman, but he says he's now a woman because mental illness is real, folks. Clip number 15.
Our server said, yes, sir, when I was asking some questions. And I said, oh, no, I'm actually not a sir. And instead of apologizing, or I don't know what else you would do other than apologize, they just walked away, did not acknowledge what I said, just walked away. We saw the server like whispering to a manager. And a few minutes later, the manager came over and, you know, really big smile, not acknowledging at all that the misgender had happened. And I say, hey, look, the last person, they misgendered me and that really hurt. And they just walked walked away. And the manager said, oh, well, some people just aren't as progressive as you. And then they gave us a nice little chocolate that suggested they wanted our money, but didn't want to say sorry. So we left and got a full refund. It's one thing to get misgendered and then get an apology, but it's another thing to get misgendered and then be told that it's okay and not to worry about it. And here's a chocolate.
Do you hear the bass in his voice? And that's not a man. That's not a man right there. You're a man. You're a man. You're a man. You're a man. End of story. Why did they give his money back? Why did they even give him a chocolate? Get out of here, you crazy person. That's what needs to be said to these people. We need to stop, you know, like engaging in the delusion. That's why words matter. That you notice that they I think it all started with even abortion, right? That's a murder of the unborn child, but they like to use the medical term for it. And that's why there's all this confusion about it when a woman has a spontaneous abortion, which is a miscarriage. So they use the medical term for it, abortion. No, it's the murder of a child. Okay? I'm sorry. That's the fact. Oh, it's transgender. No, it's you're mentally ill. You have body dysmorphic disorder like Michael Jackson. You remember Michael Jackson? He had so many nose jobs because he kept saying that his nose was still too big, still too big, still too big, to the point where he had a hole in the middle of his face and it fell off. His nose fell off because it became so small. And I guarantee the doctors that mutilated Michael Jackson and Jocelyn Weinstein and all these other plastic surgery freaks, I'm sorry to say it, they are. These are the same people that are doing this to our kids. So for people out there to say, well, the doctor told me that if I didn't do X, Y, and Z with my child, if I didn't do this, if I didn't get the counseling, what do they know? Really? What do they know? You know your child better than anyone else, But yet the Democrats, they want to shove this narrative down our throat that we're the bad guys. We're the bad guys because we want to discipline our children. We want the kids to go to school. They should be held accountable. There should be no phones in schools, no social media, none of this garbage. And then we're wondering, everybody's like, why are they not? They're upset with Vivek Ramaswamy saying about mediocrity. I don't know. Where's the lie? There is mediocrity. We accept what we praise kids for mediocrity. Oh, we give everybody a trophy. No, it should be the best person to get the trophy. My daughter, she's only 7. She does Taekwondo. They had this like obstacle course thing and she was fantastic at it. She like flew. I couldn't believe what she was doing. And they gave out trophies, but then all the kids got trophies. And I was like, no, Julia should have just only gotten the trophy because she had the fastest time. Why are we doing this? And so I even told her afterwards, I said, you know, the next time you don't win, it's okay. And because she wants to win all the time. She's like obsessed with winning. I get it. I'm very competitive too. But I said, it's okay to lose because there can only be one winner. And honey, you won that race. Where is that instinctual drive that we instill in our kids that you should want to be the best? You should want to be a winner. And it's okay to lose sometimes. That means you got to try harder the next time. And it's okay to be sad sometimes. It's okay not to get what you want. And you need to study hard because in order to get where you want to go, you need to work at it. My parents, they're from Montenegro, a former Yugoslavia, ethnic Albanians. They fled a communist regime. My mom said to me, it was either come here to America. They had nothing, absolutely nothing. And they did very well for themselves. It was either come here to America or we stay there and starve. And not only did they raise me along with my sister and my 3 brothers and sent us all to Catholic school, never borrowed a dime from anybody, never mind the government, right? My parents, they even supported their my father's family back home and their children and paid for their weddings, built them a new house, you name it. How did my parents do it? Just worked their butts off. Worked and saved. And yet somehow, some way, we've lost our way as Americans that's what we should be doing. Just good old-fashioned hard work and accepting things for how they are, even if they don't go our way. I'm Lydia Serrani at Lydia News, LIDIANEWS. Coming up, we'll be talking to Benjamin Weingarten. He's really smart. He's an editor at The Federalist, really brilliant guy. We're going to talk to him more about Joe Biden, the Joe Biden, President Trump, you name it, and the end of DEI, which is a big LIE. We'll be right back.
Missed out?
Catch up.
JesseKellyShow.com.
Welcome back to the Jesse Kelly Show. I'm Lydia Serrani at Lydia News, LydiaNews. Unfortunately, we have CNN on the screen here, and the last, like, literally for over an hour now, they've just been talking about Jimmy Carter, and they've got like one corpse after another talking about how great he is, talking about this state funeral, Joe Biden's going to be given the eulogy, blah, blah. It's just, they're so boring. They're so full of themselves. It's just gross. It really, really is. It really is just astounding to me. The other big story that everybody's talking about is H-1B visas. I touched upon it a little earlier. Listen, our visa program, there's corruption. It needs to be reformed head to toe. I mean, it's ridiculous. It really is. And you have a lot of Americans. I have a friend of mine who's been looking for a job he has a job already, thank God. Older guy. And he's telling me he's looking for a job all the time, and he applies online to LinkedIn all the time, every job, and he gets no response. And so I do think that the job market, I don't know what's going on. And then the fact that they're importing foreigners to take American jobs. Like, listen, I want the best. I do want the best and brightest. Like, if I'm getting a surgery, I don't want, Brittany Smith or whatever. I don't want her because she was a woman, and that's why she went to medical school. I don't want her operating on me versus a guy, whoever they bring, or a woman, whatever they brought them in, because they're brilliant. I want the best person for the job, period. Point blank, period. And if people want to come here on visas and they apply for those jobs and they're brilliant, they should get it. And that is why we've gotten so far off about what's happening in our country, mediocrity that's prevalent everywhere. I have a friend, he was trying to become a cop, and he did really well on the exam, and he didn't get in. And he was told by a friend of his that he said, well, listen, we had a quota. We had to have more minorities. And because you're white, you got put at the back of the line. And then you have people. There's that famous story of a guy who's Indian and his grades weren't great. He was a C student. So he was a dark skinned Indian from India. And he decided to pretend to be black. And he shaved his head, and he changed the way he dressed, and he got into all these medical schools. Think about how messed up our system is right now. This has been going on for a very long time, and it needs to stop. And all of these schools that are participating in this mentality of, oh, we're not going to allow Asian people in because they do well in the test, or this girl in, or this guy in because they're white. We need diversity. Yes, of course, diversity is fantastic. But at the end of the day, the best person for the school, for the position, whatever it may be, should get the job. That's it. Stop with this diversity, equity, and inclusion garbage. It's a lie. It hurts everybody. It hurts the system. It hurts medical systems. It hurts the education system. And it also hurts that person that is getting the leg up because of whatever is between their legs, or there is, or what's lacking between their legs, and what color skin, what nationality they are. Because then people think, oh, this person is only a doctor because she's black, or he's black, or he's this, or he's Hispanic, this or that. That's what happens. So we got to get rid of all of that. And I've been saying this before, anybody that any company, any university, any hospital that participates in any of this DEI stuff, stop asking. How about we don't ask people what their gender is? How about we stop? How about we stop asking what their nationality is? We need to stop with all of that. Who cares? We're human beings, right? That's it. That's all that should matter. And let the best person get the job. Let the best person get the spot in the school, in the medical school, whatever. That's it. End of story. We need to get back to a merit-based system. We need to stop. And then the way the Democrats are obsessed with trying to make everything equal, they're actually making things worse. That's what I think is happening. I think they're making things worse. I think they're causing resentment. I think that's what's happening. And our kids are I was telling my friend's daughter, and she was just like, what should I do? I'm being told I might not get into this school or that school. And I said, well, she's brilliant. What? She's like, yeah, but they want certain this. Enough. Like, I didn't speak English until I was 5 years old. And yet I'm considered white. I am on my skin. You know, I'm Caucasian. I'm white. And yet somebody that's been here for generations because they have brown skin, they're getting a scholarship or they're getting something ahead of me. I mean, I was a smart kid, so I did, thank God. I mean, whatever. I don't know what happened now. I'm joking. But I did. I got a full scholarship to college and all that and everything. But I went to a local school because I got a free ride. And I did get into some of the big schools, but I would have had to pay a fortune. Back then, it was like $40,000, $50,000 for like Columbia. I remember I got into Columbia. I wanted to go to Columbia. It's like $40,000. I said, I can't do that to my parents. I can't do that to myself. So I went to Iona College, which is in New Rochelle. They gave me a free ride and end of story. And that's what I ended up doing. So it's unfortunate, but maybe I think back to it. I said, well, maybe if I was half this, or maybe if I was that, maybe I would have gotten money from Columbia, because now I look back and I see what's happening. At the time when you're a kid, you just get disappointed when you don't get the grant that you wanted, the scholarship, or you don't get into the school that you thought you would get into, and you blame yourself. But 9 times out of 10, we are learning that there is a bigger system at play, and it's corrupt. I'm Lydia Serrani at Lydia News, LIDIANEWS. When we come back, we'll be talking to Benjamin Weingarten. He is a senior contributor for The Federalist. He's a really smart guy, brilliant guy. He's a father of 3 children. We got a lot to talk about. We'll be right back.
Feeling a little stocky? Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly DC.
Welcome back to the Jesse Kelly Show. I'm Lydia Serrani at Lydia News, LIDIANEWS. That's my favorite band right there, Bush. Gavin Rossdale. I can't believe he is 60 years old, fine as hell, still hot as ever. I love Gavin. Yes, if he's listening, I'm joking. I love you, honey, Victor. That's my husband. He knows. He's gone with me to concerts, and I swear, it's an amazing show. Highly recommend it. We've still got a lot more. Let's get back to what's going on here. I'm in the studio and I'm being tortured as we speak because CNN still has one old fart after the other talking about Jimmy Carter. And it's just like, really? He was like, what? I know there was like no malevolence behind, maybe, I'm hoping, behind his failures as a president. But why are we eulogizing and honoring this guy that was he was not a good president? And then they're having Joe Biden deliver the eulogy. This guy who's he's a liar. He's probably a criminal. I mean, those archive photos just came out quietly right before Christmas with him posing. He's not posing, but he knew the pictures were being taken. Xi Jinping and all these Chinese officials. Oh, I knew nothing about my son's business dealings. Nothing, nothing. KJP, nothing, nothing. Oh, you're a liar. This or that. And now there's hacking here. Oh, this person is hacked by China. Then this is, again, the Treasury Department's now hacked by China. It's because Joe Biden is compromised. This whole regime is compromised. With me now, senior contributor at The Federalist. He's also the editor-at-large at Real Clear Investigations, Benjamin Weingarten. Ben, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Lydia. It's a pleasure.
Ben, what went through your mind when those photos came out? Like, you must have, like, laughed to yourself. Like, I really? Now the National Archives is releasing these photos of Joe Biden, and clearly he has some unholy alliance with China?
Well, the first thing that came to mind was the National Archives is another weaponized. And think about this. You would think this would be an innocuous agency, National Archives. And yet they were the key instigator that coordinated with the Joe Biden Justice Department in the quote unquote documents case against Donald Trump that collapsed. And then so at the same time, they used documents as a pretext to raid Mar-a-Lago and create a criminal case out of nothing against Donald Trump. At the very same time, they are concealing, they are covering up critical information which shows the then vice president meeting with all the business partners and senior ranking members of the Chinese Communist Party while his son is getting sweetheart business deals in strategically significant sectors of the economy in China that no other American is getting. And of course, he lied about it, obfuscated about it over and over again while he was president. But it goes back way before that. The questions were apparent from the start, which was this. What did Joe Biden know? When did he know it? And how involved was he in it when it comes to the family business of selling out America to our worst adversaries, monetizing his office, his political power, his family name from all of these threats, frankly, to America? And the media never wanted to investigate it. We don't know if, God forbid, our national security apparatus actually looked into it, or maybe they did, and maybe they had all this leverage on Joe Biden in the form of knowing that his family was involved with all these dubious transactions with adversaries while he was making policy in these very places around the world. But to your point, the big 30,000-foot takeaway is, how compromised has he been for the entirety of his presidency? What leverage did our adversaries have over us? And to what extent did it impact the policies and imperil Americans? And just to give one example of the kinds of disastrous policies where you have to say, to what extent did his family dealings have any nexus to it? This administration ended the DOJ's China initiative, which targeted basically and sought to probe under the Trump administration all of the ways that China compromised our academic centers, our research centers, our think tanks. This administration ended it. That was a counterintelligence initiative at the DOJ to take on the Chinese Communist Party, and he ended it with a pen stroke. How many other policies don't we know about that have privileged our enemies who his family did business with while he was vice president?
And these are what we know about. So God only knows how many more, like you're saying, other dubious transactions or deals that have been made. And the fact that they came out finally to tell us about this cyber attack, Salt Typhoon on Friday, and then today the Treasury Department, God only knows how many more cyber attacks. I think the federal government, you would know better than me, I think we learn from the federal government about 1% of what is really happening. And that's why the role of the media is so important in doing their investigations. The Hunter Biden laptop, I know Rudy Giuliani. He had the laptop with him. He would bring it to work at the studio. We were looking through it. He tried to give it numerous times. He went to Delaware with Bernie Kerik. They tried to, and nobody would look at it. And then if you mentioned it on any platform, media platform, you got kicked off of it. You were banned. You were censored. Some people are still banned from Twitter, now X. Do you think there will be any reckoning for the media? I mean, we're seeing ratings, free fall with CNN and MSDNC. But is there ever going to be real accountability for these so-called networks that were complicit in this cover up of the Biden regime?
Unfortunately, besides the declining ratings of the legacy media, and by the way, I think this is one of the reasons why they hate conservative and independent media, because on the merits, independent and conservative media actually look at things with a skeptical eye, and we hit stories that everyone else either misses or intentionally covers up. I think they believe it's critical to their business model to continue covering for our ruling class, for our ruling elites. We have to stop thinking of the corporate and legacy media entities as just biased, sort of left-wing mouthpieces. It's worse than that. They are the mouthpieces for our ruling regime. They don't investigate it and probe it and try to bring us the truth and actually expose the powerful and hold them to account. They actually protect the ruling elites. They are captured entities of our deep state, our administrative state. And why? Because the deep state or administrative state will give them scoops. It'll give them access. It will protect their business models. There are all sorts of ways in which essentially the media itself has been compromised, and the relationships are so incestuous. I mean, how many ex-FBI and DOJ officials, intelligence community officials, did you have going on TV as contributors every single day during Trump 1 talking about how he's compromised by Vladimir Putin? So they work together hand in hand, and essentially they run information operations on the American people, including, of course, that the Hunter Biden laptop story has all marks of Russian disinformation. I mean, think about how they manufactured that. You get four dozen ex-intelligence community officials to sign off on a letter. It gets fed to Politico. That spreads through the media. The social media companies censor it because the national security apparatus has been telling them you better be on the lookout for a planted hack and leak sort of story, just like the one that came out on the eve of the election. So it's sinister and it's incestuous. The best thing we can see that we can say today is that the American people, at least 50% plus one, have seen through it. The credibility of corporate and legacy media is shot. There's almost no one with disfavorability ratings like theirs are. However, it's a very powerful force when you work hand in glove with your government. That's not what the American system is supposed to be. That's not what the First Amendment here is supposed to protect. But sadly, that's where our media has gone. And that makes it all the more important that we do everything possible to dismantle this censorship industrial complex so that there can be independent and conservative media to actually hold the powerful to account and expose truth to the American people.
Again, you are listening to Benjamin Weingarten, a senior contributor at The Federalist. He's also editor-at-large for Real Clear Investigations. Before we go to break, Benjamin, maybe if you could stick around with us, I want to play this clip, clip number two. We have to talk about Biden's commutations. There are repercussions to what he's done. The largest day of clemency, 1,500 people, he gave them clemency, and then 37 of 40 guys that were on death row, he commuted their sentences to life in prison. Clip number two, you're going to listen to the parents of a Columbus police officer that was killed by a thug. Take a listen.
Feeling a little stuck.
I cannot speak strong enough about how absolutely devastating this is to think that someone can take the legal system and just basically say it doesn't matter.
The family of former Columbus police officer Brian Hurst are trying to make sense of President Joe Biden's decision to commute the death sentence of their son's killer to life in prison.
I'm one of the few Republicans that actually understood when he pardoned his own son and him being a parent. I'm just shocked that he would be so willing to forgive someone who murdered my son.
When we come back, we're going to talk more about Joe Biden. How is it that he's making life and death decisions like this, and yet he's clearly not of sound mind himself? I'm Lydia Serrani at Lydia News, LIDIANEWS. We'll be right back.
Feeling a little stocky? Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly Show.
I cannot speak strong enough about how absolutely devastating this is.
Welcome back to the Jesse Kelly Show. I'm Lydia Serrani filling in. You can follow me on social media and everywhere at Lydia News, LIDIANEWS, like news, like you watch on TV. You can watch me on Newsmax. I'll be working New Year's Day, filling in on the show from Newsline from 12 p.m. until 2 p.m. Eastern, then back again Friday, then Saturday. I'll be working Saturday, 5 p.m. Eastern, and Sundays at noon Eastern. We still have on the line with us Benjamin Weingarten, senior contributor at The Federalist, editor-at-large for Real Clear Investigations. Before we went to break, real quick, before I let you go, Benjamin, I know it's been a long day for you. You were on Newsmax with me earlier. You have three small children, a loving wife. So I'm sorry to keep you up and keep you working. So I appreciate you coming on with me. How is it possible that Joe Biden is still allowed to make, or pretending it's Joe Biden, is still allowed to make these big decisions like the clemency and commuting of these killers and child murderers? I mean, these are the worst of the worst. How is he still allowed to do this when he can't even be trusted to go to get ice cream by himself?
Well, first, it's a pleasure to be with you, and thanks for having me. And I think we're ending this presidency the same way, frankly, that Joe Biden started his campaign, if you can even call it a campaign, for the presidency, which is that he was never in command. He was always a figurehead at best. And really what we've been witnessing is the third term of Barack Obama, a shadow president who is senior most personnel parachuted into the most senior positions under Joe Biden. And it's a scary thing to consider that he hasn't really been the commander in chief the entire time. I mean, maybe you could say we're in better hands, but it's even worse potentially than incompetence or decline is that we actually have progressive ideologues in power. And that's how you explain how you've had such an erosion of our prosperity, of the rule of law at home, why there's been calamities abroad with all of our worst adversaries gaining and with this administration helping those adversaries, and then ending with these commutations and pardons where you're re-victimizing the families and you're essentially rewarding the most heinous criminals for the most despicable of acts. By the way, including Chinese nationals, to go back to our last segment.
Shamlin Jin, that guy.
Communist Party. The only way you can explain it is this is progressive ideology. This is the natural end of it, which is that actually the worst criminals are treated as the victims, and it's as if it's society's fault. And the way that we create social justice is to just decriminalize the worst of the acts. It's despicable. It's heinous. It makes us less safe. It incentivizes crime. And frankly, it's a blight on our country that you have these people not facing justice, those who are on death row not facing death for their horrific acts. And my heart goes out to the families. I can't even begin to imagine how devastating it would be to have the people engaged in these heinous acts against your family somehow let off the hook. It's just disgraceful and despicable.
It really is. Benjamin Weingarten, thank you so much for joining us, and I hope you and your family have a happy new year.
Happy new year. Thank you, too.
Thank you. So as we come to an end and a close here, thank you again for having me fill in. It's been an honor. I love Jesse Kelly, everything that he does. He's a brilliant guy, hardworking guy, family guy. And what we have learned throughout these past 4 years is to question everything. That's what you need to do, question everything. Don't let anybody gaslight you. Don't let anybody bully you into thinking something. You know, it's here in New York City, deep blue New York City. You can't even, you couldn't wear, now you can. But it was crazy. You walk down the street with a MAGA hat. It was like, it reminded me back of the days when, during COVID, the plandemic, and people were wearing, if I didn't wear a mask while I was walking down the street, I would get dirty looks because they were so delusional. They were so brainwashed into thinking that this virus could somehow fly through the air across the street and infect people. I almost got arrested because I allowed my daughter to play on a swing and a seesaw in my neighborhood in Westchester County. This person saw me. They roped it off. Do you remember this? They roped off the playgrounds. They didn't let the kids play outside. That's the insanity that was going on. And a cop showed up and threatened to arrest me because I allowed my daughter to go on the swing. I mean, and it reminds me of what was happening also during this term. No, the crime isn't down. No, the illegal invasion isn't as bad as you think it is. And all these other, the economy is great. Bidenomics, it's thriving. Well, no more. We're not going to be lied to anymore. The truth is the truth. No matter, you can slice it any way you want it. And it's a beautiful thing. The beautiful thing, the truth, no matter how hard you try to shove it down, you can't. The truth is what it is. And that's why President Trump coming back into office where he belongs, where he should have been 4 years ago, but we know what happened there. But thank God the American people, half of this country, it woke up. It woke up and it put the woke to sleep. Again, I'm Lydia Serrano. I end every show that I do with a message of hope, especially during these trying times. Trust and remember that God is with you in all ways, always. Listen to that. Trust and remember that God is with you in all ways, always. Never, never doubt God's power. Never doubt the power of prayer, your faith. Focus on your faith, your family, and your freedom. God bless you all, and I hope you all have a happy new year.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.